Welcome to the Hot Stove.
Going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Nelson Cruz.
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The Kings 1-2 swing and a miss. He gets them whiffing on a changeup.
Let's fire up the Hot Stove and talk some Mariners baseball. Here's your host, Rick Riz.
Say, Prince.
On the way, swinging a drive deep to left field by Zunino. Going and going, and this one is way out of here into the second level. Holy smokes, Mike Zunino with a long home run straight away left field, high above the lower deck. Wow, what a shot by Zunino. His 22nd home run of the year. That matches his career high. A tape measure home run, and the Mariners have the lead 1-0 over the Rangers here in the top of the fifth inning. And what a blast by Zunino.
Mike Zunino can hit a baseball a long way, and he is the answer tonight in our trivia question. Once again, the question was, at the end of the first hour, in Mariners history, which catcher has had the most extra base hits in one season? The answer, Mike Zunino, 50 extra base hits last year. Our winner is Hiram from University Place, so congratulations to Hiram. He wins the Mariners Majestic three-quarter sleeve batting practice jersey. Way to go, Hiram of University Place. And Shannon and Mike Blowers, producer-engineer Gary Hill, also joining us tonight. I tell you what a year for Mike Zunino. To see the change, the turnaround for Mike Zunino after going down to Tacoma, as we talked about with Scott Brosius, to be able to have pitchers throw him a strike, and when he got a strike, he could do something like that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where at the major league level, they're obviously talented people, and Mike is one of them. He can do some things that you can't teach people when you talk about his power and his ability to play defense. But, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to put it together and be consistent. You mentioned the list of catchers, and you have Mike Zunino with 50, Dan Wilson with 47, but then Mike Zunino again in 2014 at 44. So you look at the top four, he's there twice for him. So you can see where the potential of all this is, and I thought it was great to see him and even talk to him in the second half about where he was at, how he was feeling. You could see his confidence really get, I think, at a high level for him. And sometimes you have to go through, and things have to go well when you've worked on. He had a lot of changes, not just last year, but over the course of his career so far. And you have to find that one thing that kind of clicks and locks in. And I think that maybe he did that last year. So it'll be interesting to watch him this year. And I've said it, he's very talented. And where he's going to hit in the lineup, he could be a real difference maker for them. The power obviously is there. It's just how consistent will he be. And I think he's maybe turned that corner because of what he was able to do last year.
Mike, you mentioned his confidence, and it was really interesting to see because you see it with so many young players where they will show confidence, but maybe it's not – sometimes that's a show in itself.
Yeah.
And especially in the position that he's in, it's something when it's not there, he's got to make it look like it's there. What did you see from him behind the plate as far as having to handle a record number of pitchers and getting through that? I mean, can you think of more of a test for him? Is that all come together for him, and what do you see him – kind of, you heard Scott Brosius kind of list him as the leadership of Mike Zunino.
Yeah.
Where do you see that going?
Well, I think that Mike has always had, I think, a strong personality, not meaning that he talks a lot or is a rah-rah guy, but when you sit down with him and he starts to talk about the pitching staff, and this goes back early on for him, you can tell he's prepared, you can tell it's important to him, and you can tell that he is in charge of that staff. And I think that's a rare thing because I think for any team that is trying to make that next step, the catcher is critical. And Mariner fans know that with Dan Wilson, the job that he did for a lot of years behind the plate. And Dan was really quiet. You didn't hear Dan say a lot. But Mike, I think, is a strong guy and a strong personality, and I think that's important. But I think the other thing that you have to think about, and we talk about it all the time, all the pitching changes because of the injuries last year, he had to handle all of that, along with trying to figure out how to hit. But he's always said it to me, and he said it to you, Shannon, too, and Rick. The most important thing for him is to get those pitchers through the nine innings, but he still has to go and produce offensively. And I think sometimes it's difficult because you can see the talent that is there. But it just – people progress at different times and different ways. And I think for him, some of that failure, I'm sure it was really painful. Because I can guarantee you this. I don't care who you are. When you walk up to the plate and it's June and you see 201 on the scoreboard and you know everybody else is looking at it too, That's painful. That's a hard thing to deal with. And mentally, you better be pretty strong because you're going to be in the lineup and you're going to hear it from the fans. And at some point, you have to get past that. And more importantly for him, he can't show all of that stress from that because of his job behind the plate and how important that is. He has to be able to, at the very least, seem that he is confident, even though at times I'm sure it was very difficult for him. Those are things to me that gives you an idea and a hope that one day all of that talent is going to come together for him and you're going to have something really special that does, because he has as much power as anybody in the game.
I'm sure, Mike, there were a number of times in the course of your career where you had to change things up, maybe
constantly
offensively with your swing and make adjustments, no matter how long you had been in Major League Baseball at the time. But it seems like for a young guy who had been struggling, you got to be mentally ready to say, okay, it's time to make some changes and go ahead and accept the changes that somebody had in mind. Hey, so let's try this.
Look, sometimes it's forced upon you. When you're struggling and that you really don't have a lot of say in the matter. And sometimes you get to a point and you realize this is not working and I want to change and I need a change and I need somebody to help me with that. It started with Scott Brosius, who we talked to earlier. And then, of course, Edgar, on having an eye on him every day at the major league level also helps. And I think there are a couple things to it. You can talk about mechanical changes in your swing, but I think there's also an approach that is involved. And I've never spoken to anybody that is more prepared or has a better idea or a better approach than Edgar Martinez. And even for somebody like Mike, having Edgar there, even when things aren't going well, to keep him positive and tell him what's going to happen the next time up and to look for this and let's try to do this, yeah, takes a lot of the pressure off of him, because he's still dealing with that pitcher that's out there too. That's where a lot of his mental just goes into it every single night. And so hitting at this level, I think it's harder than it's ever been. You look at the velocities of where they're at. Starters, you're lucky to see him twice, and now you have a turnover in the bullpen, so you don't even get to see a guy the third, fourth time.
97,
and they're all throwing 97 miles an hour. Hitting is tough today, but I think he's really turned a corner.
Yeah, it's amazing how, with so many pitchers, as you mentioned, Shannon, 40 different pitchers, he's got to find out who they are. You know, there was a guy coming in the clubhouse every other day and didn't know who the guy is. Okay, now let's sit down. What do you throw? When do you like to throw it? And he had to handle a pitching staff with 40 different guys on it.
Yeah, and he had a good chuckle about that a couple of weeks ago when we had the Hot Stove League show over at Safeco Field. He said he couldn't name all of them if he had to. Yeah. And also told a great story of when Thiago Vieira first, when he made one and only start and almost took out the umpire and Gary Cederstrom. And he warned Gary a little bit, and Gary didn't believe him. He's got that job as well, to try and protect the umpires, too, from young rookies. But you know what? He's, again, going to be a big story, something we'll watch down in spring training. And I think that we'll look at him, and it's going to be fun to watch, because his name is one that comes up quite a bit when you talk about leaders. And when do they take that next step from young player to being, you know, part of that core to being that leader? And I think Aaron, he is a pretty big leader of that pitching staff, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how that impacts the rest of the clubhouse too, as he has that confidence, as he has that part of his game.
Yeah, I'm excited about what Mike can do here in 2018 and beyond. He's still a young guy. Say, friends, add the Safeco Field Suites to your list of places to check out in 2018, whether hosting clients and coworkers or family and friends. You and your guests will enjoy Mariners baseball from the comfort of a private suite. This premium seating option includes game tickets, VIP parking, private Skybridge entry, and a catering credit. For more information, visit mariners.com/premium. Coming up next, we're going to visit with a young catcher in the Mariners organization. He came over from Tampa Bay last year, made quite an impression late in the year. Mike Margema is going to be our guest as Hot Stove continues on this Valentine's Day edition of Hot Stove right after this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Swinging a fly ball into center field, backing up Eric Young Jr. to the warning track, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Mike Margema with a home run to right center field, his first home run in the big leagues. How about that for Mike Margema? Right center field into the bleachers to the right of the batter's eye. And the Mariners have their first run of the afternoon on his first big league home run. Way to go, kid. Mike Margema out of here to right center. It's now the Angels 6 and the Mariners 1.
And Mike Margema joins us here on Hot Stove. Mike, what was it like? First of all, welcome to the show this evening. What was it like to hit your first major league home run? And the final, I think it was the final day of the regular season last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it and allowing me to come on and join you guys. Yeah, it was a incredible experience doing it, especially in Anaheim in front of a ton of my family and friends. And, you know, being a California guy and having gone to school at Long Beach, I had a lot of support there. So being able to do it in front of those people and kind of, you know, cross something off the old bucket list, per se, and to be able to do that was incredible.
So who got the baseball? Who'd you give it to?
Oh, I have it. I have my bat and the ball framed at the house. My dad has it in the office, so I'll let him hold on to it a little bit before I get a little man cave going on myself.
Mike, you're very active on Twitter, and that's much appreciated. You kind of keep us up to date on a lot of things in the off season. But one of the neat things to see is you wasted no time in getting to Peoria. What do you see down there right now?
You know, it's incredible. I think the biggest thing I see is just the excitement. You got a lot of guys coming into camp right now. You know, a few guys came in early, really early. You know, my biggest thing was getting down here and just getting – I couldn't handle myself, just the excitement coming in. And you see that the energy and really the guys coming in knowing that, you know, this is a really cool time for us. You know, the roster that has been put together, the guys in the clubhouse – you know, I think Mariners fans should be really excited for this year to come.
Mike, what is going to be the most important thing that you need to accomplish when you go into camp this year?
Myself personally?
Yes, you.
Okay. You know, I think the biggest thing is just continuing to get better every day. One of the things that I've always really felt like my hitting has been a big strong point, and I feel like I've come a long way defensively, and just knowing that I'm going to be glued to Dan Wilson's hip, you know, and just, you know, all our guys and Skip and everyone and just picking their brain and working on my defense and working on my craft. Definitely staying with Edgar and Bro and Pre and keeping the swing going. But, you know, first and foremost, really getting to know our pitching staff even more. It was great being up in September, but we have a few new faces. So getting with those guys, getting on the same page, and like I said, continuing to hone in on my craft every day.
Very smart, sticking real close to Dan Wilson, buddy.
I've heard that's a pretty good idea.
No, that's a great idea. This guy was one of the best. Tell me a little bit. You know, you come up at the end of the year for the first time in the big leagues. You come over from the Rays organization. So you work behind Mike Zunino. You have a chance to spend time with a veteran catcher and a great catcher in Carlos Ruiz. What did you take in the last month there working with Zunino and Carlos?
You know, the biggest thing I took is just the way that big leaguers go about their business and how they're and why they're big leaguers. You know, we learn when you get into pro ball kind of how to be a professional and how to go about your business. But when you get into the big leagues, there's so much more that's involved, whether it be the preparation. You know, I give you a great, you know, really quick example is every game in the third inning, Chooch would go underneath, down to the cage, hit, do some defensive drills off the machine, get ready, and then go down the bullpen and get his work into the bullpen. And you're talking about a guy that's been around the game for so long that you'd think he almost kind of has it maybe figured out in a way, but he never went about his business that way. He went about his business every day, honing his craft, getting better. And so pretty much for me, I was just their shadow. Every day going in Z, I know Mike, you talked about how prepared he is. Going into the film room early, just shadowing these guys. You know, hey, Z's going to the film room. Z, I'm coming with you. And these guys took me under their wing and showed me what it takes to be a big leaguer and how to go about your business. So for me, more than anything is the confidence knowing I can play at that level. But I think in another sense is knowing how they prepare to allow themselves to play at that level. And for me, that experience was truly it was an honor. It was very, very rewarding for me.
Looks like you spent a little bit of time in the DR this offseason, and it was great to see that you talked a little bit about it, I believe, in Lookout Landing and the experience there. What did you take away from that?
You know, at first I was kind of didn't really know I had a surgery, a quad repair surgery the year before, and I was kind of planning on going down there. So this was kind of a few years in planning on whether or not I'd be doing it or not. And it kind of fell through the off season before. So this year, when the opportunity presented itself, especially for a team like Lisay, I felt I kind of needed to go and take advantage of the opportunity. And the biggest thing I learned was just, really just, I guess, getting comfortable being uncomfortable, being in a place where, you're the minority, you don't speak the common language. A lot of things aren't easy. And when you're in the big leagues, none of it's easy. There's a lot of pressure. The games are, you know, very intense, and the atmosphere is to win. And that's how it is very much in the Dominican. So those things around the game were great. But I think the biggest thing was just the experience and learning the culture. And the baseball aside, you know, really that wasn't the main factor. It was just going down there and being able to relate to our Latin guys more and the things that they have gone through in order to come to the States and, you know, where they come from. And you can hear guys talk about it all the time. And until I think you get there, you can start putting some images together with their words and you get to see firsthand what it's like. And so that was truly it was an awesome experience and something that I would love to do again.
I think that the people that are listening right now, Mike, can tell that you have a pretty good idea of where you want to go and what you're doing and the way that you express yourself. And I was really fortunate. Mike was on the caravan with me this winter when we went over to Eastern Washington. And I have to say, I've done it for a lot of years, Mike. You have, I thought, by far have been the best on that. Unfortunately, that means you're going to have to go every year. So we'll interrupt your winter. But the thing I want you to talk about a little bit, because you've talked about the catching and trying to learn as much as you possibly can. I don't think people understand. Can you talk about becoming a catcher and how all of that happened and how you ended up getting here at this time?
Yeah, for sure. So it briefly started a little bit as a junior college transfer to Long Beach State. When I got there, I was a third baseman. When I was drafted, I kind of caught once in a while there for some scouts who thought it might be a good idea. Just wanted to see me in that position. And then really it was about my second year of pro ball that I started converting over to catcher. With the White Sox. In a year or two later, I kind of split time at third and first with that organization. I got traded to the Rays. My first year there, I played first base. And then as about 2 years ago, I got back in full-time into catching in AA, and then last year in AAA in Durham. So I would say I'm not so new to it. You know, doing it full-time for sure is something that is kind of new, but there are so many factors that come into the game. You know, for a lot of fans that they often ask, you know, who calls the pitches? And we're like, well, we do. And they're like, the coaches don't. I'm like, no. You know, we come up with a game plan. We come up with a thing. And there's certain things that you can feel and see and how the game is moving. You know, it's, you're just watching guys walk up from the batters or from the on deck circle to the batter's box. How are they moving? How did you get a guy out the first time? You know, if say you get Mike Trout out one way, trying to get him out the same way and doing the same exact thing, he's going to make an adjustment. And so for us, it's learning the game within the game and trying to learn how to call pitches. And that's why I think you don't see a lot of really young catchers come up to the game, is because there's a truly an art to calling calling pitches, you know, managing the running game, which our coaches definitely help out with. And so a lot of those factors come into it. So more or less just learning situations, learning when pitching inside, when to use your off-speed pitches, you know, pitching behind it. And a lot of that comes with just the comfortability of knowing your staff and knowing your pitchers. So all those things come into play more than you just see whether or not you're throwing out runners or blocking balls or you're receiving numbers. It's truly, you know, being the captain and the commander and managing the game.
How comfortable are you going to be with all those things that you just talked about? One of the other things I think that is important is you're going – to be behind the plate. You have Felix on the mound, and you guys are going to talk in between innings. And you obviously have a game plan going into the game, but maybe on a particular day, Felix's slider is a little bit flat. It's not a very good pitch for him. And you to go up to him in the dugout in the second, third inning and say, hey, that pitch, we need to put it on the shelf for a while, and let's go to the changeup a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that is going to be, you know, for me, is I pride myself in communication and being able to communicate with our guys, and that's something that our relationships form, and spring training is a great time for that, being able to communicate and get to know each other even better, right? And for me, I want him to have just as much trust in me as I have in him. And, I mean, you're talking about a guy that knows his stuff and knows it better than anybody, and so I'm always going to err to the side on whatever the pitcher thinks. I don't know if we'll ever bang something completely. We can definitely use it and maybe counts that aren't as high leverage to see if maybe he can get it on maybe in the inning later. Maybe it just happens to come out inning later. So I think for him, I'm just really going to play along with things they've been doing. And me and Paxton have had some great talks so far down here. He's been down here early, and we've been able to sit in the cold tub and the hot tub and just you know, talk about pitching and what he's trying to do and those things. So the biggest thing for me is just communication and, you know, getting the trust of our staff.
Visiting with Mariner catcher, young Mariner catcher, Mike Margimo here. And Hot Stove and Mike talking about communicating during the off season. You're a substitute teacher. Tell us a little bit about that, and how did that prepare you for playing baseball? And what class did you teach?
Oh, so I've done teaching anything from maybe an AP chemistry class to a PE class or anywhere in between. It really started my dad's a high school teacher at Rockland High School, and a few years ago, a former player that was from the area had gotten his degree, and I ended up getting my degree 2 years after I signed. I went back to Long Beach and finished my degree and graduated with my bachelor's. And he said, "Hey, man, I'm substitute teaching as a job in the off season." And I was like, "No way!" And I was like, "He's like, yeah, man, you can do it, and if you have your degree." And I have my degree, so I went and got my certifications done, and I'm very well interconnected with the my alma mater, Granite Bay High School, and then a lot of the local high schools in the area, and especially at my dad's high school. So the teachers are very open for me to have it, and I was a pre-med major before I ended up transferring to Long Beach. So I know I have a pretty good science background, and so I guess in the science class has been really helpful, and the teachers really appreciate me coming in, and I always pride myself in being prepared for anything. So they've been awesome. I'll give me some lesson plans going to teach. And for me, it's being able to be with the kids. And that's one of my big, feel like missions in life is to be able to help promote, positive change and help these kids, find a path, because, I know I would have loved to have that when I was younger, and I got it from a few guys, and hopefully, being able to use this platform with baseball, to impact some young kids and help them follow their journey, to chase down their dreams.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, I'm sure you were outstanding in the classroom as a teacher. It's going to be fun watching you this spring, trying to win a job, helping out there behind home plate. You were very impressive at the end of last season. Mike, thanks a lot for being our guest.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, good luck, buddy, down at spring training this year. Mariner catcher Mike Margibaugh, we're going to be back with Jesse Smith from the analytics department with the Seattle Mariners. We're going to talk about some numbers. We'll be back with Jesse right after this timeout on Hot Stove.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Hey, everybody, single game tickets are on sale now, which means you can lock in your seats to some of the biggest games of the year, including opening night, kids' opening day, fireworks nights. Those are great, man. Great fireworks show out at Safeco Field. You don't want to miss those. And big matchups against the Yankees, Dodgers, and more. Get ready for Mariners baseball at Safeco Field when you visit Mariners.com for tickets. Rick Riz, along with Shannon Dreher, Mike Blowers, Gary Hill, our special guest right now here in the second hour of Hot Stove on this Valentine's Day edition is Jesse Smith. Jesse is our director of baseball analytics for the Mariners. Jesse, thanks for joining us tonight. Tell the folks a little bit about Jesse Smith and about your journey to Seattle and how you got here, buddy.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, guys. I guess first off, we've talked to the jocks, so now we can nerd out for a few minutes here. my path is a pretty unusual one. The short of it is I was a statistics psychology major in college, and then out of school, started a concert promotion company with a good friend of mine. Which, frankly, I knew nothing about, just dived right in. And while we were doing that, we were working with all these bands and trying to really, we were so many bands, we had to figure out who was, we had to separate out the good ones from the bad ones in terms of who we could rely on, who we'd make money with versus, who was going to hang us out to dry. So we started recording tons of data, and at this time, I really started building out my skill set for predictive analytics, because that's what we need to do to survive. And after a while, it sort of occurred to me that we could take that and I could apply it to something that I was really passionate about, which was baseball. And so when I did that, hacked together a predictive ERA model, and I sent it out to all the teams, and that was 7 years ago. Unfortunately, the Mariners gave me an interview, and here we are. I'm sure I could talk quite a bit longer about that, but I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about?
Jesse, since then, you had this idea, and you were able to get into the predictive analytics, and in 7 years' time, it seems like that department and that part of baseball is just moved so quickly and grown so quickly. How much do you know now as opposed to then, and how quickly is that changing? It seems like every year there is a new metric. There is a new measure for that metric. It can be behind the scenes. It can be on the field. We'll see a trackman out in the bullpen. How fast has this grown?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I feel very lucky to have broken in at the time that I did with just all this technological explosion. I mean, I feel like every year that goes by, I have a completely new perspective on things. It's hard to put myself back where I was at the time, but I know that I did not think of the game at all the way I think of it now. The idea of batted ball, vectors, and pitch movement the way that I think about it now were just, I guess I was far more outcomes-based. I would look at, you know, the results of things. You know, a good pitch was a pitch that was successful. Good contact was contact that, you know, went over the fence maybe. But, you know, now we're so much deeper into the process of things that that I think it just changes the way that analysts look at the game. And, frankly, it's really a lot more similar to the way scouts, I think, have always looked at the game, which makes it a lot more fun and I think creates a much more cohesive work environment as well.
How difficult was it, Jesse, at the beginning to get that information down onto the guys that are on the field and have them buy into it? And was there any situation at all that was really uncomfortable for you with that?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you introduce radical ideas, you risk stepping on toes. And, you know, at times we've had some bad ideas too. So you're always risking, you know, losing buy-in. if you sell something bad, they're not going to trust you anymore. In terms of specifics with the Mariners, I feel like, you know, leadership sets the tempo. You know, buy-in's always been pretty strong from the organization. When, you know, when leadership brings someone in to deliver a message, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, it's get on board or get off the train. I feel like it's never really been awkward. You know, there have been those conversations where maybe it gets a little heated, but I think, you know, at the end of it, everyone is on the same team. We're all just trying to win. I guess there's no one thing I really look at. You know, we've had some crazy ideas that maybe have never come to fruition, but, you know, I think we all just sort of look back on those and laugh now.
Give me one of those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess one, I won't name any names, but one that just gets pretty much nonstop play in the office is when StatCast information was coming in. So this one's only a couple years old. You know, it started really changing the way we looked at defense. And again, that's another area where, you know, the way I looked at it then versus now is just fundamentally different. But we had a player that was, you know, that was not a shortstop. In fact, had never been a shortstop in their entire career, even going back as far as high school. Not a single game played at shortstop that we could find. However, which is obviously not a good indicator. Our information was telling us that, you know, in terms of range and tools, you know, we thought this individual might be able to play shortstop. And at the time, we had not done our due diligence and determined that going back all the way to high school that, you know, there was literally no games played at the position. You know, it was kind of just one of those, I guess we call it a propeller head idea, a little bit disconnected from reality. And as we sort of peeled back the layers as a group of scouting input, you know, we realized it was probably not the best idea, but it was really fun. And I think it ended up being a really good thought exercise for anyone, for everyone involved. So now it's just sort of a, you know, a fun joke that we all tell all the time.
So Jesse, you're in Arizona right now. And before you went down there, you tweeted out, I thought, something pretty interesting, talking about spring training stats and how they're not all complete noise. So, and what you can give away, what should we be looking for in spring training?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I can be pretty liberal about this because, you know, the good people at Fangraphs and stuff have put together some compelling research on this stuff by now. So to the fans out there, if you really want to go digging, it's out there. I remember that early on, you know, I was also of the opinion that, as I think a lot of stat-heavy people were, that spring training stats were, you know, they can lead you astray, and that's certainly still true today. Small samples always need to be taken in context. But early on, when I made that predictive ERA model that I was referring to, I noticed, you know, very clearly that, you know, I had the spring training information, and when I included it as part of the whole puzzle, you know, it made my model better, and I checked it very thoroughly in every possible way, and you know, it only worked for certain statistics, and so yeah, that brings me back to the tweet, which is that sort of the statistics that stabilize the fastest are the ones where you can take that spring training data and actually put it to work for you. So, you know, in those stats, I think the way I put it online, and I think it was something that someone said to me once that really resonated, was just that if we think about statistics for stabilization, you know, a great rule of thumb is just, you know, however much control the individual has over the action or the statistic, it's more likely to stabilize quicker. So, you know, pitchers hold the ball and they throw the ball, so they have much more control over a single pitch than a batter does. They're the initiator, the batter reacts. The batter can only work with what's given to them. And, of course, you know, they'll only put balls in play at a much lower rate than the pitches they see. And then, of course, if you're relying on what the fielders are doing, where the fielders are, and how good they are at fielding those balls in play, those are going to stabilize even slower. So, you know, the pitches themselves, if we're interested in pitches, of course, like velocity, is something that we're always interested in spring training. That'll, you know, we'll learn about that very fast. How well is it coming out of the arm? Learn about that very fast. Command, you know, a little bit slower, but we can learn about that very fast. And then plate patience, you know, swing tendencies, the swing rates, zone rates, batter's eye, how much are they chasing? What are they swinging at in zone? How much are they whiffing? Sort of all these process statistics, we can learn quite a bit about in a very short amount of time. They definitely will stabilize, you know, well within one spring training. And then some of those other stats that are outcomes-based, you know, when I say outcomes, I mean ground ball, fly ball, line drive, you know, and of course we can get into base hits as well. You know, those will take longer, but it doesn't mean we should completely ignore them. It just means we have to really start, you know, looking at them with a grain of salt. Could take, you know, 1,000 plate appearances for us to really learn about an extra base hit rate. So if we see a lot of extra base hits over the course of 50 plate appearances, you know, maybe that moves the needle 1 or 2%, but you can't get carried away.
Something that we'll really be watching in spring training too is D. Gordon in center field. What do your numbers tell you about D. Gordon in center?
Yeah, so that one is really interesting in my mind anyway. Obviously, D. Gordon has exceptional speed. He does not have a long track record of playing outfield defense. So there's quite a bit of projection going on with what we're looking at. But one thing that has been very clear to us that, you know, I think we always knew was the case, but StatCast has really corroborated and made us feel much more confident about is just how much speed is predictive of good defense. Someone as fast as D. Gordon has a very good chance of being an above-average outfielder. And conversely, you know, a very slow player, they could have great instincts, but if they lack, you know, that top acceleration and foot speed, it's really hard to make up for that, and it's, you know, virtually impossible to be an above-average center fielder without at least average or better speed. So, you know, I'll just say, you know, D. Gordon, day one, you know, it'll be a work in progress. Obviously, it's a learning curve. Coming in on balls, going out on balls, there's all sorts of different opportunities. He may have strengths and weaknesses. And especially around those walls, you know, that's just very difficult and takes repetitions. But I think in terms of, you know, what he's capable of becoming is very good. And I think that his raw tools will allow him to, you know, to pick it up quickly and be adequate to above average on day one.
Visiting with Jesse Smith, Director of Baseball Analytics for the Mariners. I have about 30 seconds of the segment, Jesse. Analytics have come a long way, offensive stats, defensive stats, now pitching. How far are they going to go into the future? What kind of things are we going to be looking at?
Man, I only wish I had the crystal ball. I feel like it is changing so fast. At some point we're going to get to the point where, you know, we've gotten it to the point of marginal returns or beyond the point of marginal returns. And by that, I mean, well, we've gotten so close that, you know, we may tweak something, but more or less we'll line the players up the same way in their abilities. And at that point, you know, we're going to really start looking at other things like, you know, I imagine sort of the biological level. We'll be looking at, you know, neurological studies of, you know, how hand-eye coordination works and if we can tweak it. And, boy, who even knows where it's going to go? It's going to be crazy.
I tell you what, it's come a long way over the last, well, 10, 15 years. If it moves, you get a stat for it. Jesse, thanks a lot for being our guest tonight. We're going to be fun watching you and working with you all season long.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right. Jesse Smith, our Director of Baseball Analytics for the Mariners. Hot Stove continues on this Valentine's Day special right after this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Fly ball deep left field. Yes, sir, the Blue Jays are going to Texas. Edwin Encarnacion has won it for the Blue Jays 5-2 with a dramatic 11th inning home run into the 200 level here as he's mobbed by his teammates and a sea of blue down on the field.
And later I took that to Tacoma and I met Stan Nakarada, who was the general manager of the Tacoma Twins. It was at the end of the season, but he heard my work and he said, I like you and I can have you work next year, but I don't have anything between now and next April. Go see Doug MacArthur at the University of Puget Sound. I went over there. Doug heard a little bit of my basketball tape. He turned it off and he said, I want you to come here. We'll hire you to be the fundraiser, and you can do the play-by-play of our football and basketball UPS loggers. That's what I do, but I want you to do it. And I never forgot that, nor those two, because really, they gave me my opportunity, and Doug in particular, hearing my work and saying, you can do this.
And that is the voice of longtime broadcaster of the Toronto Blue Jays, Jerry Howarth, who has announced his retirement from the game of baseball. We've known Jerry for many, many years. After spending time down in Tacoma, good friend of his, Don Hill, really got him going down there as well. He got to the Blue Jays in 1982, a year before he got to Seattle. He worked with Early Wynn as one of his broadcast partners and had some great years, obviously, with the Blue Jays. Back-to-back World Series titles in 92 and 93. So Jerry Howarth retiring from the game of baseball. And very good friends with Kevin Kremen. And Kevin really enjoyed Jerry when he came in the booth. And Jerry would always say to Kevin, take it easy on the expansion Blue Jays, Kevin. Because the Mariners, and as you know,
which included last year, too.
Every year. Yeah. Every year for 35 years, he would say that. And the Mariners and the Blue Jays were expansion cousins back in 1977. So we wish Jerry Howarth all the best as he retires after a long, outstanding broadcasting career as the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. And he, along myself, I worked with Dave Niehaus for 25 years. He had the pleasure of working with Tom Cheek for 25 years or so in that broadcast booth. And Tom Cheek is also in the broadcast wing of the Hall of Fame, as is, of course, the greatest announcer of all time, I think, and Dave Niehaus. So we wish the best to Jerry Howarth. Any Jerry Howarth stories here? And he was always fun to be around. He always made Kevin laugh.
Well, he always made us feel so welcome every time that we came to Toronto. You could turn around and there he was. Yeah. He was kind of the welcoming committee there at Rogers Center. And then coming into Seattle, just, you know, he did his homework. And I so appreciate any time an announcer comes into the booth and asks questions.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a fun guy. Jerry Howarth, retiring after many, many years as the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. Again, this reminder, buy more and save. Discounted tickets are available for groups of 20 or more. Flexible seating options, private hospitality, and picnic packages are available to complete your group's day at the ballpark. For more information and to book your 2018 group date, visit mariners.com/groups. We'll be back with more as Hot Stove winds down 2 hours of baseball talk. Mariners talk right after this timeout.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Someone once said, you don't grip a baseball. A baseball grips you. It fills our days and brightens our nights. Over the course of a season and the span of a lifetime. We share hope, drama, and joy. It brings us all closer together, 9 innings at a time. It's the game we live. It's the game we love. Welcome back, baseball. Welcome back.
The great voice of Dave Niehaus, one of the greatest announcers of all time, and I'm telling you, folks, if that doesn't make the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up, nothing will. If that doesn't get you ready for another baseball season where hope always springs eternal, nothing will. I love that. His voice, talking about, you know, another baseball season. Shannon, Mike, Gary, doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't get any better than that. I was pretty fortunate to break into this side of the business with you and Dave and try to learn how things went. But I can tell you, one of the biggest thrills for me, especially going to Bethel High School and growing up in Spanaway, was coming to the Kingdome for the first time when I was breaking into the big leagues. And Eric Hansen strikes me out on a curveball. And to hear Dave Niehaus say, welcome to the big leagues, kids,
yeah,
is one of the greatest highlights in my career. It was just awesome because I went back home and watched it. And to hear that, I thought that's pretty awesome because growing up around here, you know, listening to Dave and him doing his thing, as you mentioned, the best to do it, it was pretty cool for somebody that was local and to see something, even though it was a strikeout.
Yeah. I had the joy, the privilege, and the pleasure of sitting next to David for 25 years, every day, every game, for 7 months out of the season. And I'd sit there, especially game five of the division series against the Yankees. He was always there for the great moment. That's what made David so great. And also in the lean years, he made Mariners baseball entertaining. That's where David really made his money. But he was there for the great moment. And when Edgar hit that double, the only thing I could think of was take off my headphones and let this man call the greatest call in the history of the franchise. While Junior was running around third base, I'm jumping up and down like crazy. And Dave is describing everything beautifully, melodically, never missing a beat. And the Mariners will play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. My, oh, my, it just continues. And I'll tell you what, Gary Hill, great way to end the show today with the voice of Dave Niehaus talking about spring training.
On the day pitchers and catchers report, it's a perfect thing to hear.
Exactly. And here it is, Valentine's Day, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, ladies. And I tell you what, Shannon, you're going down to Arizona in the next few days.
Yep, ready to go. Be there Sunday.
And I'll be down there on the 20th, Mike on the 21st. Our first broadcast, first game on February the 23rd against the San Diego Padres. And that for about 28, 29, 30 games down there. And the Mariners open up the season against the Cleveland Indians at home on March the 29th. Right here at Safeco Field. Our thanks to Scott Brosius for being on the program tonight. Robert Ford, the broadcaster for the World Series champion Houston Astros. Also Mike Margimo, one of the young catchers looking for a job this year. And Jesse Smith as well.